much, Joe Partaviola. Welcome to the Forbes Books Podcast. And there's that old line, those who can do and those who can't teach. But that's a bit of a fallacy, and my guest this week is proving that. His name is Jim Hunter. He's been teaching entrepreneurs for decades at the Lubar School of Business at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. But over the course of his entrepreneurial career, he's founded and run multiple successful companies and held the role of CFO, vice president, and director in others. Jim has an interesting idea. He believes that college is the perfect time to start your business. And he's written a book to explain why. It's called Graduate a CEO. Jim, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Look forward to talking.
Yeah, so, I mean, I love the title of the book, Graduate a CEO. But Jim, as you know, college is hard. And the idea of starting a business while in college, for some, may seem pretty intimidating, especially if they've got a side hustle, they've got to work, they've got a week's full of classes all on the docket. Why do you think starting a business in college is the perfect time?
Well, the main thing is that the colleges throw money at students and provide lots of assistance to students who want to start their own business. I'm not entirely sure why colleges do that, but it could be because they want to graduate somebody that's going to be very wealthy and will make contributions to the college later on. And then maybe they have another motive other than a selfish one of getting funds from those graduating students. But colleges do encourage students to have their own business, as much as it may seem at odds with their college experience. A good example is a young lady in Eastern South Carolina who had a golf scholarship. And this was a very consuming activity, but her dad kept mentioning to her every time she'd come home, why don't you find a product or a service that you could use to start a business? And one semester evening or end of the semester, she came home and said, Dad, I think I have the product. And it's called a socket locket. And she's featured in the book. She did develop this product. She got a patent on it. And she was lucky enough to get one of the major retailers to take it. And lo and behold, she had so much work with her product that she couldn't continue her golf scholarship.
Wow.
As it worked out, she was very sharp. She graduated in 3 years. And she didn't continue with her golf scholarship. But she did continue with her business, and you'll find it if you go on the internet and search for it. Socket Locket is there, and it's been very successful for her.
Wow. And you talk about this element of throwing money and supporting young entrepreneurs while in college. Another thing, and Jim, you know this for entrepreneurs, one of the hardest part when it comes to building a company, building a team, starting a product or service is having that network. And what people fail to realize is, you probably will never have a deeper bench of talent than you do in college, because not only do you have your peers, but you also have these individuals and professors who maybe some have already started a business or are currently entrepreneurs. So talk to me about the networking opportunities of starting a business while in college.
Well, it's a tremendous opportunity. An example is the entrepreneurship class that I teach. We have 20 guests that come in during the course of a semester. And most of them are entrepreneurs who have started their own business. And many of them will say to the students that if you ever have a need to talk with somebody about entrepreneurship or getting your own business started, feel free to give me a call. And they do that. An example of a student that maintained their network after graduation is Jesse DePinto. He and a partner who he had in college with other businesses formed a company called Front Desk, and they now employ over 300 people, very successful. But it was a student that Jesse knew from college that joined with him after graduation to start that business. It's been very successful.
Wow. And let's talk about entrepreneurship in college. I feel like the word entrepreneur has taken so much weight over the last few years. And Jim, I don't need to tell you this, but I'm going to say it anyway. The idea of entrepreneurship has changed so much over the last 20, 30 years. I always joke with my entrepreneur friends, when I was a kid, you know, as a card-carrying Gen Xer, when I was a kid, if you told someone you were an entrepreneur, they would say, oh, what are you, unemployed? And now the word entrepreneur really does have a lot of meaning to it. And in not only in terms of like being successful, but the impact you can make being an entrepreneur. Talk to me about that evolution, about the word entrepreneur.
Well, I agree with you that years ago, it was somebody that didn't have a job and they had a side hustle at night and it didn't earn much money. But today, it is an opportunity to really start something meaningful. The same individual that I mentioned before, Jesse DePinto, he had two other businesses when he was in college. And then he graduated and worked for the man. You know, he didn't have an entrepreneurial effort when he graduated. But a few years later, he joined with a former classmate and started Front Desk. Students today will start something, and they may feel that it has to be a booming success, but it really doesn't. In fact, you learn a lot more from your failures than your successes. So we encourage students to start something if they have an inkling that they want to do it, because they'll learn so much by starting a venture, even if it isn't the one that they end up with, that they should give it a try.
And let's talk about that word success too, because I feel like because of the fact that we know how successful people are. I mean, back in the olden times, Jim, you knew someone was successful if they had the last name Rockefeller or Vanderbilt. But now we know exactly the net worth of everyone. And we know that being a millionaire means nothing anymore. In 2023, being a millionaire means, oh, okay, you're doing okay. Now people strive to be multimillionaires and billionaires. What do you tell your students about the definition of success? What is success to an entrepreneur today?
Well, it may not be typically what you just described. I think somebody is a successful entrepreneur if they are able to support themselves with their business. Now, that may be a small business, but the kind of the break-even point is $600,000 in sales per year. Then that's enough revenue to be able to pay yourself a salary similar to what you might make as a manager in the outside world. I would say that would be a success, even though it's not a multi-million dollar operation. The independence of having your own business, I think, is a wonderful thing, and to be respected. And even if it isn't a multi-million dollar success, in my book, it's a success if you're able to support yourself with your own venture. And usually what happens is it grows from there.
And Jim, you've been teaching entrepreneurship for 3 decades. And one of the things that people say today is, my kids are so smart. They have so much information at their fingertips, blah, blah, blah. But what are students like today compared to when you started teaching entrepreneurship nearly 30 years ago? Are they, in fact, savvier? Do they know more about starting a business? How has that changed in terms of the student mindsets?
Well, I think the difference is today there are so many resources that are made available to the students. I don't know whether the students are different, but the resources available are different and more beneficial. And so I suppose that has an impact on the nature of the student themselves. I guess I can't really compare the students 20, 30 years ago with the ones today. I think they still have the same drives and the same reticence. I've got one fellow that I've been working with at the university who has been wanting to have a business for the longest time. And I can just see him spinning his wheels and trying to come up with something, but not jumping off the cliff. My motto is just do it. And that's not my own, obviously. But a lot of times students will be reluctant to take that first step because they're afraid. And my suggestion is go ahead and do it. Just try to minimize your losses because you're going to have them, and get the experience of starting a business. Usually people that are successful in business as an entrepreneur have done several businesses, most of which probably failed. But then they'll hit on one that really is a success. And that's, I would say, what Jesse DePinto did. He finally found one that was a success, and it's been a booming success for him. But he had two others that were very modest in their success.
And, you know, entrepreneurs know you can't start a company without capital. You just you can't do it. And we're talking about college kids who mostly don't have that much capital. How do you coach them or advise them when it comes to answering that question of where am I getting this money from to start a company?
Well, number one is take part in as many competition exercises as you can, because they usually have a cash prize. One of the students won a local competition, which I think was about $5,000 to $10,000. And then a local radio station had another competition that was another $10,000. So there are many of those opportunities if you're willing to compete to get funding. There are also opportunities to get loans. There's an organization in Milwaukee called Wisconsin Women's Business Initiative, and they support women businesses and minority businesses. And in fact, that same organization helped me, even though I wasn't a woman or a minority, but they found my business opportunity beneficial, and they provided a loan when I really needed it. So there are those sources of capital out there. You have to really search for them. Another one was what's called a Patriot loan, which I was in the military, and so I qualified in one sense, and I ended up getting a $50,000 loan very early on when the banks wouldn't even consider me. So there are opportunities out there to find it. You really have to work for it and search it out, though, to find the sources of financing. Now, one of the more typical sources is private equity, where a private individual will put money up for ventures, and they will take a piece of the business in return for their investment. I chose not to do that. I chose to keep the control and the ownership of the business among the founders. Now, not everybody will do that. That was my choice. And it was very tough because I didn't seek out that kind of financing. But often people will seek private equity, especially if they have a business that's going to suck up a lot of capital and grow rapidly. Mine didn't grow that rapidly. It did require some capital, and I was able to borrow enough to make it happen. That was my my business called Dynatrap, a mosquito trap that we ventured into in 2010.
And Jim, let's talk about your entrepreneurial journey, because like you mentioned, you've done a bunch of worked on a bunch of projects. But I understand, like, early on in your career, you bought a business hoping to turn it around, and unfortunately, you didn't turn it around, and it really hurt you bad. Can you tell me about that situation?
Yes. Some other fellows that I had known from college and I ended up buying a business from the trust department of a bank. It had been losing money and the price was low because it was a losing proposition, but we thought that it was something that could be turned around. There were a lot of factors in it that spoke against turning it around. One being it was a petroleum-based product, and we bought the company at the time of an oil embargo where petroleum prices and everything that was came from petroleum went sky high in cost, and we just couldn't make it work. It was a real slog for 3 years, and I did. I put a lot of my own money in it. And it was my sole source of income, and it went bankrupt. And that's not a happy thing. There was a lot of learning that went on during that, but it's an expensive way to get that learning.
Yeah.
My wife started a business. My daughter started a business. My son started a business. The three-year-old started doing the laundry for the family. And I started three different activities to keep body and soul together. It was a very tough period of time, but it was a very strong learning experience. I never will go through it again because I'll be smarter having learned a lot from the failure. I would encourage people to take the jump, maybe not like I did, because I think I went in pretty blind, but to take the jump and get started, not wring your hands and think about, gee, I wonder if I should or shouldn't, just go ahead and do it and try to minimize your losses and try to make it work if you can.
And so let's we don't want to just make this all about sad Jim Hunter stories. Can you talk about some of your successes? Because it turned out you ended up being a pretty good entrepreneur. When did you realize you finally had the knack for it?
Well, I'm not sure. In 2010, I bought a product line out of bankruptcy for $16,200 and pumped a lot of my own money in, borrowed from my wife, borrowed from my son, got a Patriot loan and a WIPIC loan to get the company up to the point where a bank would look at it. It was a mosquito trap called Dynatrap. And it really worked. It caught mosquitoes, which was a good thing. And we built from basically zero to over $40 million in sales over a period of about 6-7 years, and then sold the company to a private equity firm.
Wow. And when Dynatrap hit, were you like, man, all of this has finally paid off? Like all of the failures, all of the bankruptcies, how fulfilling was that when you were able to flip the company?
Well, it was very fulfilling. I really had hoped to maintain it and continue it, but my partner was 20 years younger than I, and he felt it was time to sell, and he might be right. So we decided to sell the company. But I guess if he hadn't pressed hard to do that, we might be operating it today. So I'm not sure I knew that it was the right time to sell, although we did very well in selling it. But I think the buyer almost doubled sales the next 2 years. So it was a good company and a lot of good prospects, even more than what we were able to realize.
And does your entrepreneurial brain ever shut off, Jim? Do you see yourself dipping your toe into a business or founding a company until you're gone? I mean, is that something you could say? You've noticed that you've mentioned that you've changed and you're a little smarter when it comes to jumping into these things. But can you see yourself just continue, you know, not ever getting rid of this entrepreneurial bug?
I'm afraid that is the case. Although my kids, who are now in their late 50s and 60s, so you can tell how old I am, keep their eye on me to make sure I don't go off the deep end. But I'm constantly looking at opportunities. In fact, I'm working with an engineering professor at University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, who, along with a gentleman from a prominent aluminum foundry, has come up with a product that is superior in characteristics. It's an aluminum silicon carbide graphite casting that has lubrication properties built in, and it can be used as a cylinder liner in an engine, an internal combustion engine, and it has superior properties because it will lubricate without the use of engine oil.
Wow.
And we think that one of the prime uses of this product is drones that are used by the military, because they need the light weight of the aluminum, yet they can't use electric engines because of the weight of batteries and the components. So they use internal combustion engines, but they need them to be light and they need them to last. And so we think that our product will fit that market. So we're working on trying to get it into that market, and we'll see what happens.
Wow. Have you cleared that with the kids? Have they given you the green light to pursue that?
Well, they know me well enough that if I'm going to get involved in a substantial investment, they'll be brought into it. So far, it's been more an investment of time and not money. So if we get to the point of having to put some money in, I'll sure check with the kids first.
Good. Just making sure. So we talk about the education piece of your career, the entrepreneurial side. Let's bridge those together. How did that happen? What inspired you to become a professor and teach kids all you learned during your days as an entrepreneur and until now?
Well, part of it was a necessity because I started teaching not too long after my business failed. And so it was an opportunity to earn some money, but to do something that I enjoyed, and that was start helping people start businesses. And so it was a natural evolution of needing some money, but also, and you don't make much as a college professor, as right. an adjunct professor, that was part of it. And the other was just an interest in entrepreneurship. Even though I'd had a major flop, I still was very much interested in entrepreneurship and encouraging others to give it a try.
And that led you to writing the book, Graduate as CEO. And let's answer that why. Why was it important for you to write this book? I mean, you're obviously teaching folks on the daily how to become an entrepreneur, and I'm sure you get hit up all the time for questions about it. Why was it important to write this book?
Well, I felt that there wasn't a book quite like this. And one of the features of the book is that there's a student story in every chapter. And I've read a few books that had real life stories in them while they were making a point. And I felt that if we were able to talk about entrepreneurship and the various aspects of entrepreneurship by using examples of students, that it would be an interesting book while educational. I didn't see a book quite like that out in the marketplace. And so I thought, well, I'll give it a try.
And what was the process like? Because some people call it a very cathartic experience to basically open up your guts and tell your story and tell the story of these students. What was the whole experience like for you?
Well, I thought it was very interesting. I enjoyed talking with students. I interviewed a lot of students to develop the information for the book. And that was a lot of fun, really. I got to know them better. And there were really interesting stories that each of them had. And so I enjoyed hearing their stories and then including them in the book. So that was fun. And while at the same time, focusing on an aspect of entrepreneurship that was important.
All right. So let's talk about a couple of quick hitters about entrepreneurs if they're popping on this podcast. Right now, what is the one thing that entrepreneurs are doing right?
I'd say it's probably the most important thing that they can do, and that is what's called customer discovery. And it's not market research. It's determining if there is a need for your product. And you don't go out and ask somebody, do you need my product? You ask them, how do they handle whatever the matter is that the new product will cover? So you find out what their day-to-day activities are as they relate to the product that you're proposing without telling them what the product is. You deduce that the product is going to solve their problem by learning about their problem. And that's really the most important thing for student entrepreneurs, really, is to find out what the problem is that you think you can solve.
All right. And on the flip side, what are entrepreneurs doing wrong?
Not doing what I just said, where they will come up with an idea that they think is terrific, and they'll jump to the point of producing a product and trying to sell it without even knowing if there's anything of value in the product. So customer discovery is probably the most important thing an entrepreneur can do, and it's not always done. Sometimes people will launch a product that they think is just wonderful, but nobody else does. And they spend a lot of money creating a product, and they find out there's no market for it.
I kind of like to call it the entrepreneur's conundrum. You find a problem, fix a problem. When folks come to you and ask you about, like, you know, what kind of business should I start? Is that something that you talk about, like the idea of like fixing something that needs to be fixed?
Yes, certainly. It's a matter of being aware of your day-to-day activities. And just by living, you run across problems that need to be solved. If you're not thinking about it, you let some of those problems that need to be solved go by, and don't really consider that there's a possibility that you could solve that problem by creating a business. So it's a frame of mind. One of the books that we use in the entrepreneurship course is called The Ideate Method. And what it does is it kind of forces you to think about problems and to think about the magnitude of the problem. If it's a migraine headache problem, then it probably merits a solution. If it's just a mild irritant, it may not be worth developing a business to solve the problem.
You know, it's funny too, because nowadays, I maybe this is just me, but I feel like every entrepreneur is just kind of just trying to come up with the next great app and like then sell the company to Facebook or Google and move on. What are you seeing people in the entrepreneurship space sort of delving into? Is it all different verticals? Like, what are you seeing as a very popular vertical for entrepreneurs to look into?
Well, there, of course, is a broad array of different ideas. One of the ones that I thought was really interesting that one of the student groups came up with in this past semester is using artificial intelligence to analyze a plate of food to determine the calorie count and vitamin characteristics of the food that's on that plate. And you know, that sounds pretty much far out, yeah. But with the developments in artificial intelligence, I think it's in the realm of possibility to do that. And it was pretty exciting, I thought, that they're really thinking out there, pushing the envelope in terms of what artificial intelligence can do, but I believe it can be done, and they're going to pursue it.
It's hard enough, Jim, to start a company and make it successful. But the one thing I've discovered from speaking to entrepreneurs over the last 3 years is scaling. And if you're the right person to scale the company, because as you know, many entrepreneurs, not all, but many of them are subject matter experts on whatever that product or service is. Like, they're the ones who developed it, came up with it, created it. But then when it comes to scaling and building that company, they may not be the person to do that. You've seen many instances where a founder will step away and then hire a new CEO to run the company because they don't have the toolkit or the ability to run a bigger company. What do you say to entrepreneurs when it comes to that issue of scaling and if they are prepared to be the one to ride it into the sunset?
Well, I think it's very difficult because usually an entrepreneur is pretty possessive, but if they're smart, they'll recognize their own limitations and hire people around them that are smarter and more capable in certain areas than they are. There comes a point, as you mentioned, where the business is only going to go so far under your direction and tutelage. And the entrepreneur needs to recognize what their strengths are and their weaknesses are. And many people that I talk with say, you know, the reason I'm successful is that I hire people smarter than I am.
Right.
And if they can swallow their ego enough to do that, they have a good chance of being successful.
And how about the leadership part of it, Jim? Let's get into more of the esoteric, feely, foo-foo stuff that people talk about these days and steering a company. Like we said, the subject matter experts can create the greatest idea, but they may not be the best leader. Is that something that you discuss during your entrepreneurial classes at your college?
Yes, we do. We categorize it as ethics. That may not be the right category, but right. Basically, the idea is to develop an organization where the people want to come to work, that they enjoy each other, they enjoy the challenge of their part in the whole business activity. We were fortunate enough to have that kind of environment in the Dynatrap organization. The people that worked in that organization, and we ended up having a little over 20 people at the time we sold it, so it wasn't a huge organization, but they wanted to come to work. They wanted to work with each other. They enjoyed after work gatherings. They enjoyed the camaraderie. And we feel like we were extremely fortunate to have an atmosphere that created an environment that people really liked to come to work and to achieve. And we recognize somebody every year with a cash and little plaque for their participation in one aspect of leadership. And we had several different categories of leadership, and we gave awards to students for, it's not students, but employees, for their exhibiting these characteristics. And that all helped, I think, to create an atmosphere where people really enjoyed coming to work and working with their team. And we were lucky because we were able to develop that. That didn't always happen.
And did you feel you were fortunate because there was already a pretty strong culture in place at Dynatrap, or was that something that you were very intentional in doing when you first jumped in there?
Well, we were very intentional. I started the business myself and then added two other people early on, and then we ended up adding over 20 people. But we were fortunate that some of the people that joined with us were oriented to developing teams, and we did engage in long-range planning. The entrepreneurial operating system was something that we used for the planning of our business, and that helped us a lot. It was a more formalized system, and it worked for us. In addition to that, we had some people that were really oriented to developing teamwork, and we were very fortunate, had a good team atmosphere.
That's awesome. His name is Jim Hunter. He's the author of the book, Graduate a CEO, Why College is the Perfect Time to Start Your Business. Jim, thank you very much for the time. Good luck with everything you're working on, with the book, the teaching, and who knows, maybe your next business down the line. So thanks very much for taking some time to chat with me today.
Thank you.
You're welcome. To find out more and connect with Jim, go to jameshhunter.com. And that'll do it for this episode of the Forbes Books Podcast. If you enjoy the show, make sure you take a second to subscribe so you automatically get new shows when they drop. Also, if you have a minute, I'd love if you left us a review so more amazing entrepreneurs like yourself can discover the show. And please don't forget the golden rule and treat others as you want to be treated. Thanks for listening. Until next time, adios.